Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:11 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 12th. I thought today that I would look at a number of point and figure charts. I don't think we do that often enough. And most particularly it's useful when you get trends that sometimes people find difficult to analyze because obviously there is a big bull argument out there, for example, with cobalt, that everyone thinks that the price is going to go to the moon. I even saw somebody make a prognostication that it was going to go up 149,000%, that demand was going to go that high over the course of the next couple of decades. Well, we have to remember that the cure for high prices is high prices in the commodity markets, and that when prices get that high, then you start to get these pullbacks. Because when prices go up, it encourages both additional supply to come into the market, and then also that you get people starting to think about how they can displace demand for cobalt. So we're already seeing that in the battery sector, where 8-to-1-to-1 has been accelerated through the permissioning process is now is commercially available. That was something that was deemed to be almost 5 years away just last year, and now it's already in the market. So this substitution effect is certainly starting to take hold. But if we look at it on a point and figure chart, well, then we can see very clearly that the price went straight up for the better part of 2.5 years, and now it is coming back down. And when you see an accelerating trend like that, then you really do have a beautiful way to measure it, because when you get the reversal, and the reversal will inevitably come, then all you've got to do is watch the point and figure chart, and there it is. So we've already had the 3-box reversal, and now the price has had its largest pullback in years. So this is a medium-term top at the very least, and it could potentially be the top in terms of what has been really a rather phenomenal move, considering that Tesla is accelerating the pace with which it is introducing these 8-to-1-to-1 batteries in the Model 3. I was also looking at Google today, and Google had one of the most consistent trends in the world until it pulled back rather sharply a couple of months ago. We can see very clearly on the point and figure chart that you had this succession of ranges one above another, and you did have a little dip into the upper side of the range back in that period in 2016. But subsequent to that, each of the ranges was exactly one above another, and then we had this much larger, we had quite a considerable advance, and then we had a much larger pullback. So the trend did accelerate somewhat, and then it had a much larger pullback. It has found support at the upper side of the underlying trading range and the psychological 1000 level, but it is now back in the region of the progression of lower rally highs. If one wanted a short Google, this in fact would be the area. Based on the point and figure chart, this is a natural area where supply dominance could be expected to come back in if this is a developing top formation. If it's not a developing top formation, then the area around 1020 will continue to hold, and of course this is on a closing basis, and but most particularly that it will eventually be able to sustain a move above the $1,170 area. So we are at a rather interesting juncture for Alphabet at right now. Well, then let's also look at the oil price, because oil did trend really rather consistently higher, and then it had a somewhat larger pullback. We see it now over the last 5 years. I'm going to zoom in and just look at 2 years of data. And there we have a very impressive advance in the beginning of 2018. Then we had a somewhat larger pullback, and now we've had the 3-box reversal. So that suggests that there is a pause at least in the $80 area, and that there is the potential for mean reversion if we were to look at this on a candlestick chart, but it is at least going to have to rally by more than 3 boxes, which on a 78 cent move would be at least $2.30, to really start to suggest that we're in a back in a demand dominated environment. So I think that's some of those are some of the more interesting charts that we can tend to look at from both a candlestick chart pattern and a point and figure chart pattern. And when we look at the candlestick chart over the last couple of years for oil, well, we can see clearly that there's resistance at $80 and that this is a somewhat larger reaction than we've had since February. So then it does suggest that we are at least pausing. What I find particularly interesting is when we look at, for example, the trucking index, and I'm just going to confirm whether I actually have it in the chart library. It's broken out on the upside. I'm going to look at that on a weekly basis. Where we see there that the S&P 500 has, trucking index has broken higher. What I find particularly interesting is that you have a trucking strike in that it continues to rumble along in Brazil. There was a chance that it had been overcome, but it's still rumbling along. Then there is a trucking strike going on in China. It's rather spotty, and news of it is being excised from social media, but it is certainly ongoing. Whereas in the USA, you have a dearth of 50,000 truckers. Well, on the one hand, you have this electronic logbooks. And when I was speaking to the owner of a trucking company on the way back from Dubai a year ago, he was saying that more than the autonomous or rumors of autonomous fleets, that electronic logbooks were by far the biggest near-term challenge that the sector was having, for the simple reason that truckers had been forging their hours for years, and that the electronic logbook would do away with that. So the sector was losing drivers, and that they were difficult to replace because it's not a particularly attractive profession when there is so much competition for workers out there right now. So that is helping to drive trucking prices higher. And that's going to have an inflationary impact eventually. Whether it is in the near term or not is a rather large question. I think one of the additional points too is that when we look at, for example, the 10-year Treasury market, then the bond yield has been consolidating below the 3% level for much of the last few months, and it's at 2.96% right now, and it's been driven higher by the fact that there is additional new supply coming to the market. That's an incontrovertible fact. That's something that is going to, well, we already have evidence of that creating some indigestion in the market. So that's one side of the equation. On the other, that there has been a collapse in manufacturing employment, and manufacturing jobs generally tend to pay more. There has been an explosion in service sector employment, which generally tends to pay less. And of course, we're not talking about the higher paid services, but rather people that are working in restaurants or working in call centers, that they don't generally tend to be paid as highly as manufacturing workers. That has helped to keep has had a depressing impact on wage demand growth. But with an increasing number of the large population cities in the USA raising the minimum wage to $15, with a trucking shortage, then also with oil prices that are holding in the $80 area, where and a number of states that have added on additional taxes, you're starting to get inflationary pressures coming through in the commodity complex. Now, corn prices have been particularly weak over the last few weeks, but they did bounce in here today, and I don't think it's a coincidence that this represents the region of the trend mean, that $4 has been an area of resistance for this developing base formation for much of the last 3.5 years. Well, if we get upside follow through tomorrow, that is going to help to confirm that support is coming back in the region of the trend mean, that we have a progression of higher reaction lows within the base, and that there is the potential that we're not so far away from corn prices breaking on the upside. And that was on the back of the USDA forecasts of stockpiles being lower than what had initially been anticipated. Wheat is leading on the upside. It has now sustained a move above $5. And perhaps more importantly than that is that it trended rather consistently lower from 2012. We had a rather significant spike higher in 2017. Then the contract change brought prices all the way back down to test the $4 area. But now it does look better supported as it sustains the move above $5. This does look like a rather different environment. One of the interesting things that we have with wheat is that we have lots of different contracts for it. So what we, if this is QK2 is the European wheat contract, and it's breaking higher. So we have a great deal of commonality coming through in the wheat markets. And of course, bread prices are a rather emotive topic in countries that are experiencing the first signs of commodity price inflation. So this does suggest that we are on the cusp of potentially an inflation scare, and most particularly if oil prices only range. If oil prices are break higher above $80 later on this year, and that is not beyond the bounds of possibility, then that is going to represent a headwind. So it is something that we need to be cognizant of, because when we think about what the headwinds are to global growth, well, an inverted yield curve is certainly one of those. Higher unemployment would be one of those, and that we don't have either of those. The high yield spreads breaking higher, well, we do have that in Europe, and then there is also evidence that the shadow banking sector is certainly being squeezed rather acutely in China. But we do not have that particular indication in the US economy. So, and the US has been the clear growth leader. Well, the Nasdaq 100 was in positive territory in here today. And in fact, it is pushing on to new closing highs. So that is a rather impressive rally that we've had a very mild consolidation over the course of the last five sessions in the region of its peak. And upside follow-through tomorrow would suggest that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. The Dow Jones, which had accelerated higher back in January, is continuing to sustain this move above the 25,000 level, whereas the S&P 500 is also coming back up to test this 2,800 point level. And there's two key reversals from that level over the course of the last 4 months. So I think that the most likely scenario is we do get some additional pause, but as long as we do not get clear downward dynamics, then this looks like a more of a pause than a peak in terms of this recovery scenario from the lows posted back in February. And of course, the market is being led higher by the small caps, and that is the Russell 2000 breaking upwards to a new high ground today. That's also something that we're seeing in a number of other markets. Something that also stood out quite clearly today was the A-share index in China, and that it has declined rather meaningfully over the course of the last 4 months, but that's an upside key reversal in here today. It moved to a new reaction low, but did not hold it and closed well above the close of the previous day. Now, it's not particularly large, so upside follow-through tomorrow is going to be required to confirm support coming back in this area, and most particularly a sustained move back above the trend mean. But it's at least near-term or just tentative signs that demand is beginning to return to dominance in here. The H-share index has continued to pause around the 12,000 level. And this is, I think, a holding pattern for the index, considering that it did accelerate to get up to that 14,000 level and then pulled back violently. It does look like it needs a bit of a catalyst to really get it to move up and away from this 12,000 level. And what happens with Tencent is, I think, going to be rather instructive, that it was not able to hold its highs last week. It was in mildly negative territory today, but it is still above the trend mean, and most particularly above that 400 Hong Kong dollar level. If it can continue to sustain that, then the chances are that the H-share index will be able to continue to improve. But if Tencent breaks downwards, then that is likely to take the H-share index with it, I suspect. Then, of course, we have the impending listing of CDRs in China, and part of the reason that we may at least make the argument that, or at least rationalize the weakness of the mainland market by anticipation that investors are going to get a chance to buy instruments like Alibaba, which is back testing its high after pulling back to test the $200 level over the course of the last week. Then, when we look at the, I think it is probably instructive to just cycle through the industrial metals, because aluminium prices were a bit firmer in here today, and they've continued to hold this progression of higher reaction lows, despite the fact that you had that spike higher on the Russian sanctions just maybe 8 weeks ago. It has continued to hold the upward move. Zinc prices have also been really quite steady and are holding the break up and away from this range, and then the ranges that we've had over the course of the last 18 months have been relatively similar sized, approximately $500, and it is now bouncing from the 3,000 area. Then I think when we look at the lead market, it had also been ranging for an awfully lengthy time below 2,500, but then the question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move above that level. If it can do that, then the potential is that it may be able to follow zinc's trajectory. Nickel prices have been on a recovery trajectory for most of the last 12 months, but they're coming from really quite depressed levels relative to the other industrial metals. Now, it is a little bit overbought in the short term, so it's not beyond the bounds possibility that we get some pause and consolidation, but as long as it's holding the progression of higher reaction lows, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the recovery scenario. And of course, copper prices, which had really got up to the upper side of the range in a really quite dynamic manner last week, are now consolidating. So as long as the consolidation is relatively minor, we certainly haven't had clear downward dynamics of nearly the same magnitude as the advances that we had last week. So there is the possibility that this is nothing more than a consolidation, and certainly the speed of the advance has been rather impressive. We can also say that if you look at the internal dynamics of the range, that the speed with which the price rallies is quite different to the pace with which it pulls back within the range. What that suggests is that when people want to buy it, they're buying it aggressively. When they're selling it, they need some convincing. And that supports the argument that when it does break, it is going to break on the upside. If it can do that, then it's likely to take some of the copper miners with it. And Antofagasta had broken on the upside last week, but with copper prices pulling back, it was down an additional 25p in here today. But when we look at the mining sector, it has been susceptible to some volatility over the course of the last year during the consolidation, but it has held an upward bias on the FTSE 350 mining index. And when we look at the Australian, excuse me, that is the ASX 200, which is consolidating around this 6,000 level, but really needs to sustain a move away from it to confirm a return to medium-term demand dominance. But the ASX 48, which is the resources index, has been really quite steady and continues to advance. And part of the reason that it has been somewhat steadier is because of the relative weakness of the dollar, of the Australian dollar versus the US dollar, which the Aussie dollar got all the way up to test that trend mean over the course of the last few weeks, but now it is having difficulty sustaining a move above it. Well, a weaker Aussie dollar is really quite good news for mining companies that are selling their products in US dollars. So the weakness of the Aussie dollar could flatter the market overall. I think it's also worth just taking a quick look at the financials index on the ASX 200, because it's been trending lower now since the peak back in early 2017. That it's failed in the 7,000 area twice. Banks were a very attractive investment opportunity potential, I think most particularly from 2011 until 2015. They were offering yield, they were trending reasonably consistently, and investors that had been burned by the simultaneous decline in the commodity complex between 2011 and 2015 were finding succor in the financials. But financials are now underperforming, and the index moved to a new reaction low last week, and so far it has been pretty weak, and that we have not seen any clear upward dynamics, and the progression of lower rally highs remains intact. What it suggests to me is that there is risk in the Australian banking sector, and that the relative weakness of the Aussie dollar is perhaps not such great news for the Australian banking sector. And the Canadian banks have been relatively steady by contrast, but we also have to consider that the boil is coming off the property market in Ontario, and that prices are very high indeed in Vancouver. So, if that turns from more of a correction into a rout, then that is going to have an impact on the banking sector. So the lows that were posted just 2 months ago are certainly going to have to hold when we look at the TSX composite, sorry, financials. And when we look at what's going on in the UK, well, Theresa May has survived to fight another day, and that has put at least a short-term bid under the pound. It's coming back up to test this 114 level. When we look at this range over the course of well, all this time since September, it's been really quite volatile, and that is an expression of the indecision that continues to be attached to the Brexit negotiations. If in fact the UK remains closer to the EU than I think is currently the consensus, then the pound will break higher versus the euro. When we just simply take the away the entire argument, it trended lower in really quite a consistent manner until towards the end of 2016. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. The price continues to now find support in the region of the trend mean, and it hasn't really done that since 2015. And what that suggests is that the most likely scenario is that the pound will continue to strengthen against the euro. And that suggests that the most likely scenario from the completion of the Brexit negotiations is that the pound, or that the UK, will remain somewhat closer to the EU than perhaps a good many people voted for. So then, of course, we have what went on last night in Singapore, and the agreement, which is effectively an agreement to have another meeting between Trump and Kim. But the fact that they've had a meeting at all is good news, and I think quite whether we get a comprehensive deal out of it or not, it does suggest that the risk premium from that particular source of geopolitical threat has been reduced, and I think that that is what the market had already been discounting. So we really haven't had any kind of impact from that in markets at all, and I suspect that it is unlikely that we're going to have a big impact from markets on that particular front. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.